Golf Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. And by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf. And by Johnny O. East Coast traditional meets West Coast casual. The best of both worlds apparel for men and boys. Visit www.johnny-o.com to learn more. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Anne Liguori. And there is a film that opened in New York recently and is being distributed nationally this week called Phantom of the Open. If you'd like to watch a fun, joyful, and very moving, feel-good film based on a true story, I recommend you see Phantom of the Open. The film is based on a true story about a former crane operator from Northern England who registered to play in the local qualifier for the Open Championship. The problem was he never played golf before. 46-year-old Maurice Flitcroft was his name. And back in the 70s, he picked up a set of clubs, taught himself to play on a nearby beach. He registered to play in a local Open Championship qualifier as a professional and got in. No one checked his credentials. When registering, his wife checked that he was a professional, probably because she didn't know any better. He ended up shooting a 121 for 18 holes, the worst score ever. But he became a folk hero through the years, billed as the worst golfer ever. And he continued to crash several other Open qualifiers, playing in disguises and under different names. And Simon Farnaby, who co-wrote the book Phantom of the Open and adapted it to the screenplay, Simon joins us now. Simon Farnaby is an actor, comedian, writer. Welcome to Talking Golf, Simon. How you doing?
I'm very well, and thank you for having me, and thanks for that lovely introduction and very, very eloquent pre-say of what the film's all about. Thank you.
My pleasure. Well, you know, I watched the film the other night, and I must say, it's, as I said, it's a feel-good, joyous, moving story in these challenging times of ours, right? It's so heartwarming. So well done, Simon. How did you connect to this story?
Well, I grew up around golf. My dad was a greenkeeper at a club in the northeast of England. And I heard about Maurice when I was a junior, this guy who couldn't play golf, who'd entered the Open. And a lot of the other juniors and myself really connected to him because all the senior members hated him. And when you're a junior at my club, the juniors and the women, this is in the 80s, early 80s, just you felt like second-class citizens, like the men owned the whole place and they were of a particular social strata. So we sort of loved the sound of Maurice. And then, to be honest, I forgot about him. I played golf. I nearly turned professional when I was 16, but I wasn't quite good enough to be, you know, in the Open or the US Masters or whatever. So I went into comedy and writing. And then in 2007, Maurice Flitcroft died. And I read all about him in the obituaries in the newspapers. I didn't realize how big he was, actually. He was in all the broadsheet newspapers. And I just read about him and went, oh, it's that guy. It's that guy I remember from when I was a junior. And the more I read about him, the more intrigued I got. And I thought this could really marry my old sort of passion for golf and my new passion for writing and films. And it was the perfect sort of synergy of the two. So I did a hell of a lot more research, and that's how we got the book and then the movie.
Well, I know the film has several important themes using golf as a vehicle for several meaningful messages. One of the messages is about dreaming and risk taking. And Flitcroft, he was obviously a dreamer. He was not deterred by how bad of a golfer he was, the embarrassment of shooting high scores, being totally out of his league, being banned by the RNA. I mean, he wasn't deterred by any of that.
No, it's amazing. And actually, I didn't know where that came from in his personality until I was researching for the book, and we found, it was like a real golden moment. We went to visit Morris's sons, the twins who were in the film, who actually became world disco dancing champions. Great, great characters. And I said to them, have you got anything of your dad's, like any diaries or letters? And they went, no. And then about a day later, they said, oh, we do. We've got his unpublished autobiography. And he'd written a 500-page handwritten autobiography, never been published, never even been seen by a publisher. And when we got hold of that, that was the gold mine. And that really detailed everything that he was thinking about. And really where it came from was, he was from a very working class background. This is the key to the whole thing. And where he was from, you either worked in the shipyard or you didn't work. So very working class. I don't know what the equivalent in America would be, but he was a docker, you know, like the docks. But when he was about 8 years old, he was during the war, he was evacuated to Scotland to a middle-class family. And in that middle-class family, they said, oh, you can be anything you want to be. Don't be tied down by where you're from, you know. And he took that philosophy. He was the only one that didn't want the war to end. He went back home and they said, you're going to work in the shipyard? And he went, no, I'm going to follow my dreams. And I'm going to be like, you know, do whatever I want to do. But sadly, where he was from, all he could do was a shipyard. So when he was 46 and he discovered golf, he went, this is it. This is my dream, my calling. He went for it and just never stopped. Even when he was 76, he said, I think I've got one more shot at the Open left in me.
Unbelievable that you got your hands on that autobiography, Simon. Was it ever published?
No, but what we did was so Morris, his unpublished autobiography was called The Phantom of the Open. And so me and Scott Murray, who wrote the book, in tribute to Morris, we called our book The Phantom of the Open. And we have lots of quotes and excerpts from that unpublished autobiography in the book. And actually, a lot of that made it into the movie. Like a lot of the things you see in the movie are things he actually said, you know, all the letters to the RNA and his fight with the RNA is all word for word what's in the movie. The speech he makes in America towards the end, I don't want to give anything away, but that's verbatim what he said, you know, in that moment. So a lot of it, people say how much of it is true. And as I say, it's all of it, you know, it's really, really, really as accurate as we could be. So that was a great moment finding that autobiography.
Unbelievable. You made Flitcroft out to be the most innocent, naive, optimistic, lovely guy. And based on what you're saying, he really was like that in real life.
Yeah, I mean, I think when he first discovered golf, you know, golf's a game you can play on your own. I always see it like you have Pop Idol in the States or American Idol, I think it's called. Like, and singing, you know, I compare it to that. Like he was in the equivalent of being in his room on his own, but he was on the beach practicing golf and he was thinking, I can do this. You know, this seems like I'm hitting shots like they're as good as I see on the TV. So he genuinely thought he was good enough. Now, after he shot 121 and became famous for being bad, he realized he wasn't as good as he thought he was. But because the RNA, I think you mentioned earlier, banned him from even joining a club, and he'd already fallen in love with the game of golf, he had no choice but to keep coming back to the Open because that's the only place he could get a game.
Well, yeah, one of the messages of the film is, you know, to overcome failure, just keep trying, pick yourself up, be persistent, keep going. And those messages are so key. I just thought that was beautiful of him to keep trying, even though, as you say, the opportunities were getting less and less. And then another message really is about love. He seemed to do everything for his wife and family, and he was totally devoted to them.
Oh, completely. Yeah. Jean, his wife, it's a strange character because the more we dug into Jean, the more I sort of went, at first I was going, did she support him? And then she wavered or she didn't believe in him. But the truth was that she supported him and believed in him the whole way. You know, Jean actually had had children out of wedlock. She was, which is hard for people to imagine, but she was sort of disgraced at that time in the 50s. And Morris didn't care about that. Morris said, "I love you. I'll take your child. As if it's my child, and I don't care what people say." And for that, she just sort of really supported him through whatever he wanted to do, you know, and she was his rock. And as well, his sons, you know, Gene and James and Mike, his stepson, you know, came to support him and what he was doing. And Mike in the movie represents a lot of Morris's family who didn't appreciate what he was doing, because obviously he became famous, or infamous, if you like, and some members of his family really didn't like that and thought he was a disgrace, but have since come around to sort of saying, you know, being very supportive of the film and saying, thank you for putting this, you know, his name up in lights, if you like.
That's right. And Jean, his wife, the character Jean, was played so beautifully by Sally Hawkins, the Academy Award nominee. In 1988, Blithfield Country Club in Grand Rapids, Michigan, flew Flitcroft and his family in for a member guest that they named after him, in which you're awarded for being the worst golfer.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, this was a big thing, you know, that wasn't actually in the press, you know, and when I was researching for the movie, I was thinking, what's my ending, and how's this going to come right for Morris? And that, and then we found out about this tournament in Blithfield, Michigan, run by a wonderful guy called Terry Moore, who's still alive and is a big supporter of the film. And Terry just fell in love with Morris and Morris's story and set up this competition, which was a family day, you know, which was a day where members could bring their family who maybe didn't play golf, and the worst score wins. And they had all sorts of things, like they had two holes on each green. And so it celebrated bad golf, which, let's face it, is what most of us play. And that was just great. And they flew him over for the 10-year anniversary. I think it was in 86, or you might be right, maybe it was 88. But and Morris loved that. That was the highlight of his life, because he'd never been abroad before. He never even had a passport. He even kept the first class, the menu for the first class ticket. You know, he kept it. Sure. He was so proud of it.
Yeah, no, it's just a great story. Now, you know, we were talking about messages earlier, and that it also shines a light on golf and the whole environment and the private club life and the snootiness that sometimes exists amongst, you know, that private golf club environment, right? As you had mentioned earlier.
Oh yeah. I mean, golf's a little better now. I don't know what it's like in the States, but in the UK, it's much better in terms of, it's a bit more, it's more inclusive. But back then it was very much, you know, you had to have a lot of money to play. And you were looked down upon if you were from the wrong sort of class. But Morris Morris didn't know about any of that when he found golf. He thought it was like football, or, you know, just a sport for everyone. And he couldn't understand why he wasn't welcome. And he used to say, you know, golf should be like, we have a thing called the FA Cup in the UK, which is where all the little teams can enter this competition. And sometimes they make it really far, you know, they make it to the quarterfinals or even semifinals. And golf, and Morris is like, this should be what golf's like anyone can have a go. And actually, his attitude to the game, the late, great Peter Alice, I don't know if you know him over there.
Sure,
he was a big, big, huge commentator and the voice of golf. And he actually played with Morris in the 80s. He played 9 holes with him and did an article for Golf Monthly. And he said, I wish that half the pros that I meet these days had the same amount of passion and of the fun of golf and sure. enjoyed golf like Morris did. He said his etiquette was perfect. His manners were incredible. And he said he couldn't play. He was useless. But at least he was. But I tell you what, his passion and his love of the game was second to none. He said it was the best he'd ever seen.
And that's what you celebrate in the film.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, it was cast beautifully. Mark Rylance plays Flitcroft, the Academy Award winner, Best Supporting Actor, Bridge of Spies. He plays him to perfection in terms of his blind optimism, his naivete, his never say die spirit. Don't you think? I mean, it was just a perfect role for Mark Rylance.
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote the screenplay, all I had was Morris's voice and image in my head, because there's footage of him. There's quite a lot, actually, especially from America. That the footage is in the film. It's worth seeing. If you go and see it, stay right to the end and you'll see the real footage. So I didn't actually know who my dream casting was. I hadn't even thought about it. And then Craig Roberts, the director, said, "What about Mark Rylance?" And I was bowled over. I went, perfect. If he'll do it, he just has Mark has a quiet dignity, and no matter what he's doing, and that's what he brought to Morris. Like, he's doing something utterly ridiculous. What most people would say, why the hell is this guy? He can't play. What's he doing here? But Mark, conducted himself with dignity. I don't know what he does. He has a clown in the old sense. He's a clown in, like, he's very, you can read what he's thinking, you know, and he's, how lucky were we? He's a brilliant actor. When we sent the script to Mark, he loved it. He totally went for the, he totally got it. Immersed himself in the character, went to visit the families. The Morris's family love Mark. Like, every screening we go to and the family are there, they say, "Where's Mark? Is he here?" They adore him. So he did him proud.
Well, it must have been very challenging to make this story, outrageous story, seem real, but it's so based on a true story. So would you say that was your biggest challenge in writing the screenplay?
Yes, I think that's a good point. I mean, it's weird. In the UK, people say, "I wish I'd known how true this was." Because right at the end of the film, you see a lot of footage which lets you know how true it was, and it is quite difficult to believe it. But actually, it was quite easy in a way for me. Like, I've written films, like I wrote, co-wrote Paddington 2, for example, which is obviously not based on a true story. But it's sort of easier in a way when you've got a true story. You have to immerse yourself in it, and then you basically curate the moments of the true story to make it into a nice narrative. And actually, most of the time, it was saying, "We don't need that. That's not true. That didn't happen. We don't need that," and stick to what actually happened. And Mark was big in that. Mark Rylance kept saying, "I don't think I should do this because it didn't really happen," because Mark knew everything about Morris. And so we just stuck with that, you know. And it's funny, like in the UK, there was a couple of, for example, there was a review that loved the film that said, "I'm not sure about the speech at the end. It was a bit sugary for me." And I went, "Well, that's exactly what you said." There's nothing I can do about that, because that's his words, word for word. So it's quite interesting in that respect. You know, sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction.
That's true. Well, we'll end on that note. Good luck with the film Phantom of the Open, heartwarming, funny, moving, and joyously captivating. Simon Farnaby, the guy who wrote the screenplay, thanks so much for joining us on Talking Golf.
Thanks, Alan. I hope your listeners enjoy it as much as you did. Fabulous. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Golf Interview with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. And by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf.